views and opinions expressed on the following podcast are those of the persons appearing on the program and not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. What do you know? It's finally here. What is finally here? What is it? It being another edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your cordial and ADHD host. Let me check. Yep, that's me, Russ LeBlanc, saying welcome, welcome. Did I say welcome? The answer is yes. I do say welcome to you. You being a fellow ADHDer, an adult ADHDer, or maybe someone who just wants to know more about ADHD. Welcome. That's what we're here for. Our big reason for being here, Club ADHD, not only the podcast, the Twitter account, and the Facebook page, is to, well, as I'd like to put it, create a tribe within a tribe. I know the word tribe is being used when it comes to ADHD, so I'll use it. A tribe, ADHD, within a tribe, Club ADHD, or is that the other way around? In any case, it's a group that can prove to everyone that ADHD is real, and that you're not alone if you think you're struggling and you're the only person who is experiencing ADHD. Because sometimes it can be very challenging and depressing. Well, you're not alone. But sometimes it can be very positive. We do have lots of things that are hidden, sometimes hidden within us, that we can offer people. And today is a great addition. This addition is a great example, I should say, because our interviewee today is a perfect display of a person with ADHD utilizing the benefits that ADHD has to offer. And that interview is coming up. Now I'm going to change gears here. Many thanks to the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. Now, even though their focus is Canadian, the content within their website is much more than that. Because ADHD is ADHD, no matter where you live. And they have information that will help just about anyone, anywhere. Here's where you can go to check out their website. CADAC, CADDAC.ca. That's CADDAC.ca. And you'll experience their website and all it has to offer. Trust me, you won't regret it. So once again, a round of applause to CADAC for helping us with this podcast. We'd like to call Club ADHD the podcast. Now, I've been meaning to upload this podcast, this edition, a week and a half ago. We're right smack in the middle of the holidays between Christmas and New Year's. And Merry Christmas to you. If you celebrate Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. If you celebrate Hanukkah or whatever you celebrate during this time of year, I hope you have a great season. Now, as for me, I've had a few challenges, physical challenges that offered a bit of pain. And I've had some emotional pain, too, that I have to address, come to grips with the loss of family members. My mother, who had been with us for many years in her 90s, she lived with us for the past 15 years and became a very integral part of our celebrations when it comes to holidays. The fact that she's gone, that's quite a hole. The fact that we lost our nephew, quite a hole. I've lost a cousin, another hole. You know, we can dwell on that. It's tough. It really is. And I'm going to give my wife a round of applause here, because with my physical pain and looking at, oh, why is this happening? And then emotional pain, she decided to take it upon herself to invite some friends from out of town who we've been friendly with for many years to spend Christmas with us. And they have some family in the area as well. And initially I thought, bad idea. How can I entertain guests? See if I'm struggling and I hope whatever. Well, these people understood. If I needed a bit of time away, they understood. But the fact that they were here got my mind on them, off of some of the other things that I could be, dwelling on, and rightfully so. And not to say that I'm going to forget about our loved ones, about my mother. She was prominent during Christmas especially, but the fact that other people were here and it helped. It really did, and these people were understanding. So initially I thought it was a bad idea. It was a good idea. Now, if you don't have that luxury of having people there to help you, Remember, that's what we're here for. That's right, Club ADHD. We want to help you. And in turn, you can help us. And so, yeah, it got me my mind off of it. But I was in a situation, especially health, that I just couldn't, you know, focus on the podcast to get it uploaded because I was dealing with some health issues. But those health issues have subsided. And I'm back. Back in action, folks. Albeit behind the time a little bit. But we'll have another podcast. I know we will in a week's time. And I'll try to get one every week until we get caught up. And we get back to our every 2 week cycle. Now, I'm going to try. Good intentions. I'm sure you know all about them. Having ADHD, I know about them. Do they come to fruition? The fact that I mentioned it to you will strengthen my resolve in getting them done, I'm sure. But I'm sure you can empathize. So that's where we're at, folks. That's right. We're going to catch up. Yeah, that's the ticket. 2020 is going to be our year. Well, I can look at 2020 and I know that I've got some challenges that if I don't really address, it could be a lousy year. It's going to be a challenging year for yours truly. We do have some things, issues that I have to deal with. I'm sure that you might feel the same way. What I've learned is that we can't ignore them. If you have some challenges, eventually they'll come back and bite you in the rear end if you don't address them. Because hiding your head in the sand doesn't always work. It'll work temporarily, but that's about it. I've got to be productive here, folks. Life is worth it. I'm not going to ignore those challenges. That's where I'm at, folks. I've got you to help me, too. It's Club ADHD, the podcast. We've got the podcast, the Twitter account, and the Facebook page. Go to clubadhd.ca. The somewhat boring but always informative webpage with the links on there, as well as an archive for all of the podcasts. And speaking of which, we've got other people archiving our podcasts. Now, I've solicited a few of these, but for the most part, they've just found us and added us to their long list of podcasts. I say this very proudly. You know, you can hear us on iTunes, you can hear us on Google Play, you can hear us on Spotify, you can hear us now on SoundCloud. So that's good. It goes to show that, yeah, we're doing something right here. And maybe, just maybe, there are people out there who don't have ADHD who want to know more or care about us because this is a very good tool. I say that, yes, I'm connected with it. I got a vested interest in a sense, but it's helping people. It's helping me too. So that's always good to hear. A round of applause to us. And now it's time for our very special feature, a learning part of this podcast we call Club ADHD. And now, without further ado, Club ADHD presents TNT. Otherwise known as Tips and Tricks, featuring Club ADHD's ADHD coach, Jason Froats. In our last TNT episode, Jason, you mentioned about dumping the things from your brain and putting them on a piece of paper, the things to do for the day, or maybe insert them in a computer program file or whatever. Just make a list. And you told us how to create that list. And the key was, don't just create it in 5 minutes. Keep it open-ended, at least for an hour or two. So in case you remember something, maybe a half hour later, you can add that item to the list. I thought that was a great idea. Now, I had asked you, so what do? You go through the items, cross them off as you perform each item, and you said, nope, there's another element that you should, well, consider when completing this, what you called a brain dump. And that's what we're going to find out right now. No crossing off, right?
You certainly could, you know, try to, you know, get the list done, cross them off as you go. But my experience has been that we'll get distracted sometimes, or we don't often have everything on that list. And there might be even a more efficient way to get those things done, like grouping them in a certain way so that we can kind of knock them off like dominoes.
Oh, all right.
So this is a methodology that I use personally and in my practice, but also shared with some a number of clients that are using it as well. So if you've gone through the brain dump and, you know, taken, like you said, an hour or two to kind of, you know, over an hour or two to list out everything that you've got in a day, this would be the next step. And I call it task tagging. Really what this is about is making your list flexible enough that you can adjust when you need to. So the first thing we need to do is create the space. So we need a place, kind of like, you know, if you're using, you know, for your first part, creating the brain dump, a whiteboard, a piece of paper or even a spreadsheet as some examples, then I would suggest that you use those things as well. So continue to use whatever tool that you're currently using. So I call that creating the space. But whatever the space is, just be consistent with it. Go back to the same spot. And then the next thing is really to, we need to tag the task. So the tasks currently are probably naked, right? They don't have any color. They might not have any meaning. They might not have any way to kind of reference them aside from the name of what they are. So tagging them allows us to be able to group them differently going forward. So an example of a tag, Russ, would be, how long do I think this is going to take? So I call that kind of estimated duration. So how long is that going to take? And usually that's like, I break them down into 5, 15, 30, or 60-minute tasks, and 60 being like 60 or 60-plus. So that'd be one tag. Another tag would be, well, you know, we've heard of this before. What's the priority? You know, what priority is this task? Is this like high, medium, or low? And the last one that I use is just a category tag. So is this a tag like, is this a personal thing I'm doing? Or is it when I'm out and about, you know, doing some shopping around town? Or maybe it's sending an email or calling somebody. So I call that, you know, my communication tag. And so you could have certainly lots of others. I have a tag that I use for my assistant. So if it's something that I want to delegate to her, then I would just tag it, you know, as, you know, assistant or VA. And so again, the category tags depend on your situation. That's why this has to be kind of tailor-made for you. And the other thing I would suggest too is that when you're listing this out, I mean, you might be a black and white kind of person, or you might be pretty colorful. And I know that a lot of us tend to be the latter. And so I like to use lots of colors. So I'll probably make my list out in, you know, a black marker or a blue or on my computer, kind of black and white, but then I'll add color to it. So the categories could be different colors. The duration is definitely a different color, just so it stands out. So I can look at them and just glance at the spreadsheet or whatever it is I'm looking at, and I can quickly tell what the categories are.
Okay, so we have it all tagged. Everything's tagged. How do we decide what to do when?
Great question. So it really comes down to what's going on at the time. You know, what does my day look like today? So for example, if you've got a bunch of 5-minute tasks that are scattered throughout that list, because, you know, often we'll have more on our list than we think. We actually hold a lot in our head we don't realize. So let's say you've got 5 things that are scattered throughout that are 5-minute tasks, like quickly calling somebody, sending somebody an email. What you can do is sort them or do them in that order. So do all the 5-minute tasks first. If you've got 30 minutes, you might be able to crank out 5 or 6 of those tasks really quickly. And guess what? You shorten the list by 5 or 6 items right away. So I actually often will sort my list by the shortest items first to kind of make me feel better that I'm actually got some wind in my face and getting stuff done.
Well, that makes sense. So after you get those items done, where do you go? The next shortest items?
I could. Again, it depends though. Sometimes I do all this on a spreadsheet. So then what I'll do is I'll resort it based on priority maybe after that. So imagine I've just knocked 5 or 6 items off my list, and now the list is shorter. And now, wait a sec, I got some high priority stuff I've got to start working on right away. So I'll sort it by that column or that category. And now all the high priority items are on the list at the top. And then I might start working on those. So it really depends, again, on what your situation is. Ideally, you want to get Brian Tracy, you know, famous sales guru out there. I met him once, and he told me, he said, if you can eat a frog for breakfast, that's the best thing you can do. And meaning eat the tough thing that you got to do in the day. And usually you'll feel great after, because that's one of the things that you've been avoiding. So my next thing would be to suggest eating the frog. So whatever it is that you're avoiding, put that up first and tackle it right away. And if it's too big, break it up into some smaller tasks and then, you know, go through that same tagging process. Add if it's 5 minutes long, 15 minutes long, hopefully is under 60 minutes long, because 60 minutes or greater are usually things that we tend to avoid. So the smaller, the better.
So what happens if you end the day and you've done a bunch of tasks, but you still have tasks left on that list?
My suggestion would be to leave it on your list, to leave it there until the next day.
Okay.
If you've got more things the next day to add, add it into a brain dump column, but don't add it to your list. Keep it separate so you can see what did you originally have the day before. And then you can tackle those things and then go through that process and add the new items to the old list.
So I guess you could say the real key is don't dwell on the tasks that you weren't able to do. Just look at the tasks and the volume you've done.
You know, it's funny. I used to erase my tasks. I used to totally get rid of them because it felt so good, therapeutic to kind of knock them off. But then I realized, you know, at the end of the day, I'm like, well, the list is shorter.
Yeah.
But what did I actually do today?
Sure.
So now I have an archive feature and it goes to another page and archives everything I've done. And I look back at the end of the day, go, oh my gosh, I did 10 things today. That's awesome. I feel, you know, a lot better than had I just erased them. So or if there is some, you know, psychology to this.
Yeah. If it's a hard copy, I guess you could just kind of cross it out, but make sure you can see it.
Yeah, that's a great point. One line, you can't put right through the middle of it. So, you know, it's done, but you can still see that what it is that you achieved.
Great tip as per usual, Jason. By the way, if you'd like to connect with Jason, just connect with me. Go to clubadhd.ca, hit the email link, drop me a line, just say that you'd like to connect with Jason, and I will hook you up. It's as easy as that. And now let's go to the interview portion of the program, something we'd like to call the interview portion of the program. Today, we're going to interview someone who has channeled the positives of his ADHD. He really didn't know about his ADHD till later in life. However, he knew his strengths and he knew how to use them. And that's what he did. And in doing so, he became an entrepreneur, a successful entrepreneur. And things just started falling into place because he was doing the things that he loved and he was utilizing his traits, his positive traits, so much so that he wrote a book about it. And it's called Overcoming Distractions, Thriving with Adult ADD/ADHD. And oh yeah, he also has a podcast called Overcoming Distractions. Now, he and I have something in common. Yes, we both have ADHD, but we both hail from the same state. No, not the state of confusion. The New England state known as Massachusetts. His name is David Greenwood. We started off our conversation with me asking David about connecting his ADHD with the memories of his childhood.
I'm a child of 1966, so I think back in those days, we didn't even have the term ADHD.
I hear you.
We were the hyperactive child that ended up in the principal's office or, as we get older, detention. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't actually recall an official diagnosis.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because I'm getting old.
yeah, but that's part of the memory thing, right?
Exactly, yeah. But I don't recall ever, you know, going through what someone to this day may have, relate to a battery of tests, so to speak.
Sure.
At an early age, I was put on Ritalin, which, as you probably know and others probably know, was pretty much the only remedy they had back in that time.
Yeah.
So we're talking, you know, I was born in 66, so you're talking, you know, probably mid, you know, early to mid 70s by the time my mother realized that I was a little awkward.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, awkward. And by the way, David, to me, you are a whippersnapper.
Exactly.
I'm a little older than that. And that's the fallacy, too, is that before I was diagnosed, and I didn't go through a battery of tests, but I had my physician recommended that I go see this psychiatrist who specialized in ADHD. And after, you know, one session, he said, yeah, you've got it. And I'm willing to stake my reputation on it. So I don't know if that was good or bad. But the thing is that prior to that, I always thought ADD at the time, as it was called, you know, Ritalin and kids bouncing off the walls and pump them up with the Ritalin and they'll calm down. And it sounds like you were one of those kids.
Yeah. And I wrote about in my book where the days that I was completely off the walls and frustrating my mother to no end, she would just shove a Ritalin in my mouth. And, I think I mentioned in the book that wasn't probably the way it was prescribed.
No. So it was like on a need be type situation. Oh, Dave is getting out of hand. Pop him one of these.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, let's to give them a Ritalin and calm them down. But yeah, so I don't think that's the way it was,
no,
was supposed to be. But those were the days, as they say, right?
Yeah, we thought they'd never end, as the song said. Yeah, those were the days, all right. Now, when did you figure out that, okay, this is me, however, that me part, the ADHD part, isn't all that bad?
You know, probably not till my early to mid-20s.
Really?
And I think I probably, you know, I don't think, quite frankly, that I really thought anything was wrong with me other than flunking out various courses and what have you. And, you know, I don't think there was a lot of, for me, self-awareness at the time.
That's understandable because normal is relative.
Exactly. You know, and who's normal? And, you know, some people listening may totally relate to this, or some people might have a hard time grasping it. But one of my first kind of real jobs was working at a restaurant called Brigham's that you might be familiar with.
Ice cream.
Yeah. And it was my first job at 16. And you know, I started washing dishes, but I ended up, you know, getting into the grill area. But I got to the point where I could cook breakfast for 4 hours and have piles and piles of slips coming in, and I could be doing the eggs and the pancakes and everything else. And I got in a groove. And for some people with ADHD who do not like chaos, who like routines, might not relate to that. But the fact is, it was completely in my wheelhouse. You got in a groove, and you know, maybe it was some hyper-focus. And I would throw people out of the kitchen at times. You know, they'd see the food piling up or what have you. And I, oh, you need some help. I'm like, no, don't get in the way. You know, I got this.
Yeah.
So did I relate that to being ADD? I don't think so. It was just something I was good at.
Yeah, it was you. It was part of you. Were you ever affected once other people found out that, hey, this David is a little different, and someone brought up, oh, ADD or ADHD. Did you ever hit that path? And if so, how did people react? And how did you react?
Funny, I never really talked about it. Yeah, I had trouble in school, and I had trouble through high school. And I went to, instead of going to the high school in town, I decided to go to the vocational school because I did think it would be a better fit. It was also at the time where I rebelled a little bit, told my parents I wasn't going to take Ritalin anymore. So uh-huh. That was getting out of junior high, going into high school. Two major shifts in my life, and I pretty much flunked out of freshman year.
Wow.
And I think I needed to do that. But to answer your question, I don't think I really got public about it till I clicked send on the book. You know, I wrote my story, though. So the first couple chapters in the book are about me and
right.
Some of the things we just talked about and some other things about entrepreneurship. And then I interviewed a bunch of other people who were successful as entrepreneurs. But when I clicked the send button on the manuscript to go to the publisher, I got this feeling. I'm like, what the hell did I just do? I've never talked about it.
Sure.
And I've always, you know, I've been in business for a long time, and I worked at other organizations. And you always have those conversations come up. Oh, when I went to college and I did this and I did that. And I'd kind of sit there with the beer in my hand and go, ha, 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 you know, and I'd try and, or I'd go to the bathroom when the people talked about college and come back when that discussion was over. And it wasn't until the book came out that I was pretty much public about my background. I just kind of never discussed it. Did I hide it? No, but I never really discussed it.
That brings up an interesting question, or at least I think it is. Is it possible, in your estimation, for a person to go on in life not knowing about their ADHD and succeeding?
I think so. I think, as you probably know, there's a lot of people who are diagnosed late in life.
Sure.
I had someone I've known for a very long time that was close to 60. A very successful business owner, very successful here in Boston, who didn't get diagnosed till close to 60. Yeah. But yeah, I think, and again, I'm far from a doctor. I've just been in this world and interviewing people for many years.
Sure.
Like you. But I think that, yeah, that there are a lot of people out there that probably never become diagnosed. And I think, quite frankly, they might have gotten in a situation where, life is good, mm-hmm. and they're in a business that they love and they thrive and everything's going great and they're making money, and it actually is an asset to sure. what they're doing. So why would they think anything's wrong?
Yeah. And that said, if somebody did diagnose them for whatever reason, there is the risk of maybe them hanging their hat on their diagnosis too much and losing their edge.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think other for other people, and I've had this conversation with many people, it was a relief or it was an answer to some of the questions.
Sure.
And again, I know very many successful entrepreneurs that just wanted an explanation for, yeah, they're running a successful company, they're making money, but there's some things that just kind of frustrate them. You know, maybe it's the piles on their desk, or maybe it's the disorganization, or maybe I miss an appointment here and there or what have you. And then they come up with an explanation.
Yeah.
And then they can find ways to continue to thrive, but mitigate the things that seem to get in their way.
I don't know if you see this, but I know I do from my aspect when it comes to public relations or advertising or media. There are so many people that, I don't know, our ADHD radar just pinpoints saying that, boy, that person has it. They might not know it, but they've got it and they've got it and they've got it. Do you find a lot of people with ADHD, even if they don't know they have it, are in those types of careers?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the marketing world, especially, I think there's a lot of people that I would call neurodiverse. I think it's a huge asset. And what I'm hoping, and I think you're seeing it more and more in recent years, is companies realizing that it can be an asset. And you know what? If you asked me to explain it, I couldn't. But I think just people with ADHD and different styles of thinking, or that we're just handed a different brain,
sure,
can just see things in a different way. Again, I don't know if anybody's ever been able to explain it. I'll give you an example. I sold my Brigham's. I ended up going from a 16-year-old, flipping eggs to actually buying a Brigham's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, outside of Boston. And finally, I couldn't take the restaurant business anymore. But one thing that Brigham's, since they're out of business, I don't mind talking about this, but there was one thing that they were not very good at, and that was marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So you coming from this area know that they did all kinds of sales, like hot fudge sales and different things like that. And they had a calendar, and every whatever time of the year, we would dust off the free hot fudge signs and hang them up on the window. And then we would take it down and we'd dust off the next sign, and they were not innovative in any way. So I ended up franchising a location just outside of Boston from a gentleman who was in his late 70s and got ill and had owned the place for years. It was kind of run down. So we went in and remodeled the place. We did a bunch of things. But one thing I did was beef up the marketing, and a lot of it was PR. It was just getting involved sure. in the community.
Yep.
And just, I hate the term thinking out of the box, but I had to think out of the box. And one of the things that I did, if anybody's listening to this and they're familiar with the town of Wellesley.
I'm familiar with it.
It's one of the more affluent communities within the state, but it's also surrounded by the five most affluent towns in the state of Massachusetts. There's also at least three or four colleges within a stone's throw. So there were two different audiences. There was the affluent people, and then there was the college students. So at various times of the year, I would have the rock and roll station come down, and they do a live broadcast from my store.
Mm-hmm.
And we would raise money during the holiday season. And then at other times of the year, I would do promotions with the Boston Pops, and I would send kids into Symphony Hall to do conducting lessons with Keith Lockhart,
who's the conductor. Oh, very good. Yeah.
So we were able to reach two very different audiences to help build up the business, and it worked. And that's actually how I got my training in PR. I never went to school for PR. I went to school for welding.
Wow.
I mean, nothing could be, and that's how I got my job at Special Olympics. But when I got to Special Olympics, I revamped the PR program there, and the Summer Games in any state at Special Olympics is the largest event of the year. And for us, it was at MIT and other big locations. And thousands of people attend this thing. Wow. And if you're in the nonprofit world, you know that you do everything. So you could be the CFO and you still have to vacuum the rug. And,
exactly.
You know, and for us, it was Monday morning. We get back from a big event and everybody, including the CEO, would unload the truck. And we were unloading the truck and the CEO got everybody together. And he says, I just want to thank everybody for a great summer games. This was awesome. And by the way, we've never had more media coverage in our existence than this year.
Very good.
Now, I was scooping ice cream before that.
Yeah, so, but you lived it and you utilized what you had, your brain, I mean, your creative brain, and it worked for you.
Yeah, and I utilized the street smart approach to public relations. So to kind of put a cap on your question is I think we see things differently. We know how to do things a little differently. A lot of people with ADHD are very good communicators. And when you're in public relations, you have to be a great communicator, especially when you're dealing with editors and television producers and what we would call assignment editors. They're very busy. You have to communicate effectively and concisely. And
I
think that's what I do it. So that started my PR career.
And if you don't exude professionalism, and if you're not a good communicator to these people, they don't have time for this because they don't want to hold your hand or babysit or edit and all that stuff. If you come across like you know what you're talking about and you're clear and concise, you know, that's great. And that's what we ADHDers, one of our benefits for many of us. And with that, you bring up an interesting situation that we've talked about on the podcast before. You see that, and God love them, autistic people are being utilized in the corporate world where you have industries or companies like Microsoft. They have entire divisions that consist of people with autism and focus on their strengths because they're amazing. By the same token, so are we. And wouldn't it be great that if the corporate world would see that and utilize it and seek us out as opposed to branding us as a little difficult, whatever.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think the corporate world is coming around. I think accommodations are effective in helping retain certain talent. So, for example, if you've got a good employee that could be a great employee and maybe you just need to move their desk or they need noise canceling headphones or they need to maybe adjust their schedule or something. We all know if anybody's been in business, you know that hiring and firing is an expensive thing to do for a company. And if you can retain talent, you can turn a good employee into a great employee. So I think accommodations are great as well. But you bring up a good point as well. There was a show on the A&E network back over the summer called The Employables.
I'm familiar with it.
And they placed several people on the autism spectrum in jobs such as analyzing software and analyzing patents and finding glitches in software. And because they were so able to focus and show patterns and recognize those patterns. So, yeah, I think, you know, Microsoft and, as you mentioned, and several other companies are kind of leading the way in that and recognizing that there is some great talent out there as long as somebody can be coached and accommodated.
Well, isn't that the truth? It's all about what can you do for me? And both sides can do a lot for each side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I actually did some workshops in New York City last month about that.
That's terrific.
With some CEOs to just kind of talk about the benefits of hiring people who are neurodiverse, as well as, you know, how to accommodate them. And like I just mentioned, how to tap into a different talent pool. You know, right now in the United States, we have a 3.5% unemployment rate. There are companies that cannot find talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going on for a while. So you need to seek elsewhere, you know, at a time where the unemployment rate for people with disabilities is at an all-time high. People need to come together and figure that out.
Yeah. Now, the people you were speaking with in New York, were you speaking to the converted or did you have to change their outlook or did you have to entice them by saying, well, I've got an idea here that could increase your bottom line? How did that work?
I was actually preaching to anybody but that was converted, believe it or not. It was two CEO groups. The reaction was mixed.
Yeah.
There were And I think you're going to get that in any room.
Yeah.
There are people that see how they can implement a certain discussion into mm-hmm. their organization. And there are some people who are not going to see it. You know, I think when anytime you present to a group like that, you've got to recognize that, you know, you've got a, you got a guy who runs a roofing company, and then you got another guy who's working in medical device. They're going to have very different goals.
Right.
So, but all in all, it was a good discussion. And it's funny, you've even got some of the people in the room, believe it or not, I'm sure you can believe it, who have ADHD.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you end up having a great discussion when you get into these scenarios. And I've done quite a few of them in that setting. And then, believe it or not, financial planning firms that deal with a lot of entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and business owners and a lot of their clients may have distraction issues.
Yes, yes.
And the discussion just, it's very interesting how the discussion takes off. So,
well, with the financial planner, do you want someone with ADHD? Well, I can think of no's and I can think of yeses because, yeah, it's almost, well, depending upon how aggressive you are, it's somewhat like gambling in a sense. But if you know somebody who knows the lay of the land and knows how to manipulate money to make money, and they're so hyper focused on it, I would think that would be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a good thing. I mean, I'm certainly not a numbers guy. That's the last job I think I'd ever want.
Join the club.
Some of these discussions were a financial planning firm bringing in clients, so like a business breakfast, so to speak, where I would be the featured speaker, and we would discuss how successful entrepreneurs that were maybe once distracted, how they built their companies, because for a lot of these financial planning firms, that's their customer base. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurs that, you know, maybe they're not good at certain things, they're good at other things. And they recognize that, you know, they can fill the room with, well, quite frankly, 40 or 50 entrepreneurs with ADHD.
Yeah, well, they're risk takers, and that's what we are. I mean, we take risks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But by the same token, we have to be aware that we're not great at everything. And sometimes, at least for me in my earlier years, it was tough for me to swallow that. You know, you tend to do all these things. And especially if you're leading a pack of people, I thought it was, in my earlier managerial days, it was quicker and easier for me to handle the situation. And that would just alienate me with my staff. And it wouldn't make my day any better as well, because if you're putting out all these fires or creating things, you know, it's jack of all trades, masters of none.
Yeah, I think when we can do what we're very good at and push up the other things, I think that's where we're most effective. I now understand as an entrepreneur, there's got to be a starting point and resources are slim and you've got to figure out a way to make it all happen. And I think a lot of us have been there, but I think you get to a point where you understand that you're good at A, B, and C, and you've got to let other people do the other things.
Yeah.
I've had this discussion before. You go to I'll use the Patriots, for example. When you watch Tom Brady, you know, when he's on the sidelines, he's practicing throwing the ball. He's looking at the past plays on the tablet or what have you. You know, some of the other team members are watching the game and jumping up and down. But you look at someone like him, he's really not even paying attention to what's going on in the field when he's on the sideline.
No.
He's focusing on what he needs to do next when it's his turn to do his job. And I think we can take a hard lesson from looking at people like that, where they can focus intently on doing, you know, one or two things well. There's a book by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Bob Rotella, and his book is called How Champions Think. And Dr. Rotella is a sports psychologist that worked mainly with professional golfers. And even if you don't like sports, there's some really cool chapters in there about just how to utilize the power of focus to get one or two things done. It's a really good book. So, and if you like sports, it's all the better. But he's worked with some huge names in sports. Wow. So it's a great book.
What's the name of the book again?
How Champions Think, and it's by Dr. Bob Rotella.
Okay. I'm sure people are writing that down right now. But you bring a good point up. I'm a Patriots fan. Back in my days as a kid growing up in Boston, when they were the Boston Patriots and playing at Fenway Park, you know, they weren't always the team that they are now. But I look at a guy, Coach Belichick. I mean, he takes people who are castaways from other places, were really nobodies, and Tom Brady, he was under the radar. That coach has the ability to bring out the best in people, and I think the key is he puts them in the right situation and lets them blossom.
Exactly. I think that's his kind of a calling card,
so
to speak.
And if people would do that for us more often, not only, you know, do we blossom, the whole team or the company blossoms.
Yeah. You know, when I was at Special Olympics, I ended up getting into the vice president's role. Mm-hmm. So I was responsible for the marketing, the fundraising, the public relations. I had 7 or 8 people under me. But I had a couple things that, you know, my management style. One was that I don't care if you take an hour and a half lunch, as long as you're doing your job and getting it done.
Yeah.
And if you're not getting a job done, then we have to have a chat. But if you're being effective and meeting your goals, I don't care if you're a few minutes late back from lunch.
Yeah.
But the second thing is, again, going back to the nonprofit world, is that there were things that needed to be done. There were relationships that needed to be built. And if a guy who, say, for example, was in charge of special events, fundraising events, could develop a relationship with a major donor of a company and it wasn't involved with special events, then why not let that person develop that relationship? You know, it may be a CEO of a company that would just donate money and have nothing to do with special events. I had no problem letting people go outside of their specific job description if they were effective. And I think companies need to look at that a little, you know, as long as you're not, you know, infringing on other people and what have you. But
you're the perfect case study. You've done it.
I think that kind of leads to a discussion about, you know, evolving. We talked about the business of PR, and I mean, you know, it's not what it was even 10 years ago.
No.
So I think people with ADHD do have that ability to evolve as well and to roll with the punches and recognize, say, when something needs to be changed or we need to look at a new way of doing things. Actually, I think we're not only good at it, I think we love it.
Oh, yeah.
I was faced with a predicament over the years where, you know, after Special Olympics, I went out on my own. I opened my own public relations firm. And because of my role at Special Olympics, I had a Rolodex that most people would drool over. You know, I was friends with reporters. I was friends with TV producers. And I could put clients on TV all the time. And I had an expertise of putting people, like, say, in studio where you do analysis for 4 or 5 minutes, things like that. So, I mean, people are getting their money's worth, you know, and then some knucklehead invented Facebook and Twitter and everything else.
Algorithms.
Yeah, exactly. And I know all industries change. That's a given. But the public relations industry has fundamentally changed.
And so fast.
Exactly. And you developing a relationship with a television producer and giving them what they need for their TV show or their news program or what have you, or an editor at a major daily newspaper or a business journal, is not the same skill set as you creating content for people's social media platforms. And I've had this argument with many people. It's not the same skill set. Does it help? Yeah, but it's not the same skill set.
Yeah. No, it's totally different. And I'm sure there are people listening right now who are saying to themselves, you know, I'm struggling, but I do have something to offer, although I don't know exactly what that might be. What would you say to those people who are in that boat, who might even be struggling with a capital S, but they have something to offer, but they just don't know how to find out what it is?
I just think they need to take a step back. I think there's one thing that I feel I've done well is I've always taken something from one career and built another career off of it. So, for example, you know, at the restaurant, I was scooping ice cream and making sandwiches, but mm-hmm. I was also spending a fair amount of time making sure I got press coverage so I could build the restaurant up. Excuse me. That's how I got the job at Special Olympics. I only applied for that job because A, I was volunteering for Special Olympics, but B, I continued to see the job posting every week in the newspaper. Yes, that was when job postings were in the newspaper.
A newspaper? What's that? Yeah.
And I said, they can't fill this role. Uh-huh. I've done pretty well on my own. I'm going to go see if I can become director of public relations at Special Olympics here in Massachusetts. And I got the job. But I never spent a day in the classroom learning PR or communications or, for that matter, writing, except for, you know, English and grammar in high school.
Right.
So there's a lesson here that I took a risk and it paid off. But I also had a CEO that gave me an opportunity on multiple occasions to be able to prove myself.
I was going to ask you about that. What happens if you're in a situation where you don't have somebody who's willing to let you blossom?
Maybe need to look elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm far from a psychologist or a job coach or an HR person or anything, but mm-hmm. I think we need to be in an environment where we can not only thrive, but we can feel like our contributions matter. And sure. I think that's why a lot of people with ADHD end up going into business for themselves.
Now, what led to the book?
I think a little bit of frustration. There's a lot of books out there that talk about how to raise children with ADHD or talk about how to manage medication with ADHD or how to parent and things of that nature. And I didn't see a lot of material out there that focused on the positive aspects of ADHD. I will fully admit that I was introduced to a publisher that grabbed onto the idea very quickly. They came to the conclusion that I did, is that there were not many books out there that focused on how people used ADHD to their advantage.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrific that you happened upon a publisher that was looking for what you had to offer as opposed to the other way around, because if it is the other way around, you're competing with so many different topics and books, and you're probably on a desk of someone making that initial decision. I mean, I would have to think that your ability to network and the more you got out there increased, if there is such a thing, your luck at happening upon a person or a company that's interested in you.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has to do with a little networking. It certainly has to do with knowing the right people. I understand I was lucky in that I did walk into a situation where somebody was looking for what I had to offer.
Well, David, I'm going to give you, as I often do to people who deserve it, a round of applause, a hearty one at that, because you are proof that just because we have this thing, I say that loosely, just because we have ADHD doesn't mean that we have to live a life of failure. I mean, there are possibilities out there. Just use what you've got and use it to the best of your ability. And you are proof that you've done just that and are doing well at doing it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of us out there. So I'm not running a multi-million-dollar company. So but yeah, I've managed to stay in business for a good chunk of my life, so.
Yeah, you eked out a living, okay.
Yeah. Well, I am good. Not, at least at the time of this broadcast, living under a bridge. So let's put
Well, neither, oh, wait a minute, what's that car going by? Oh, I'm just kidding. But that's terrific. You're able to find the positives in yourself, and you're willing to take some chances to use those positives to your benefit so that you can, you know, have a better life. And not only that, here's what I also like about you, David, is the fact that you're out there educating people in the corporate world, saying that, hey, we ADHD people, we have something to offer, something that you can benefit from, and in turn, we all can benefit. So a round of applause for you for that as well.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, David. We're running out of time. We've got to get you back because we just touched upon some of the things that I'd like to talk to you about. But hey, time is relative and it's up, but I want to thank you once again for taking the time to talk with us, and I look forward to reading your book.
Yeah, great. Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for having me. I enjoyed our discussion.
And once again, a special thank you going out to our guest for this edition of Club ADHD, the podcast, David Greenwood. And I thought I'd interview David to really motivate those of you who have that entrepreneurial spirit, or maybe you haven't even considered that. Maybe you are saying to yourself, I'm going to go out and do it and maybe create my own company and be a success. Yeah. Hey, we need some cheerleading, right? If you'd like to contact David, or if you'd like to check out his book and his podcast, very interesting podcast, I highly recommend it. Go to overcomingdistractions.com. That's overcomingdistractions.com. Well, that's just about it for this edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. Once again, I'd like to thank the folks at CADAC, the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. Don't forget to visit their website for all kinds of great information. That's CADDAC.ca. Oh, I'm so motivated, I'm kind of doing the shimmy while doing it. Gotta get control of myself here. Ah, what the heck. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to wish you all a very happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year, too. It'll be your year. I know it. I can feel it in my bones. At least I think that's what I'm feeling. The thing is, get up, find what you're good at, and go out and do it. It sounds easy. It's challenging, but it's worth exploring and worth doing. Trust me, I know. I'm telling myself that because I've got a challenging 2020 ahead of me. But I digress. Well, that's about it for this edition. Hey, we've got a special edition coming up in about a week's time. You know, after things cool down from the holidays, why not talk to somebody who I feel could be the poster child for ADHD? The one, the only, Santa Claus. That's right. Santa's going to be our next guest when it comes to the interview portion of the Club ADHD, the podcast. And I'm sure he'll bring a smile to your face, as well as a little bit of information that you can ponder. Beneficial information. It's going to be different, so please be sure to check it out. With that, it's time for me to say adios, amigo. This is your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, wishing you and yours a great day and reminding you that whenever and wherever possible, say it loud, say it proud, ADHD is real. Bye for now.